This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Being able to be in this position, being able to have a first year the way I did, ups and downs, and then to be able to come in here, be as confident as I was last year, or possibly even more, and to be able to get here with the group that we have, I really can't wait to get to work with these guys. We got a good group of guys, personality wise, and then obviously, talent wise, it speaks for itself.
We know that's Caleb Williams, and this is Raheemian Harris on The Score. Mark Grody in for Marshall Harris as we broadcast live from The Score's Hyundai studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. The question was asked, submitted by Ray Diaz in honor of Steve Rosenblum, our friend Rosie, a.k.a. the blowtorch of Saturdays in your life.
The Wake and Baker.
Yeah, and weren't you on with Rosie this weekend?
Yeah, I was. I was. I actually answered the question. So, yes, Steve Rosenblum. He and I are the founding fathers of Saturday Suckage and the Wake and Bake Club. You know the history of the Wake and Bake Club?
I mean, I know what it is, but I know he talks about it. Well, and no, I, too, understand Saturday Suckage,
Yeah.
It's a mindset. It's a lifestyle.
WB, though, is not necessarily because Steve and I wake up smoking weed. It's because one day, years and years ago, well before it was legal to smoke marijuana in the city of Chicago, somebody called us and told us that that there was like pounds and pounds of weed. There was a shortage on weed in the city. And we got people calling us and going, hey, what happened? We heard that there's a shortage of weed on the show. So we found out that day that we had a lot of Wake and Bake. Because it was like a four alarm fire to the stoners in the city of Chicago when we reported that.
Here's the
Smoke
thing:
weed every day.
Right. Somebody had to break code at that point to report about this. So it got serious enough to where somebody thought, "Laws be damned, I'm going to mention this and do so in a way that was disseminated as somehow news."
Yes, it was. It was like news, and then you had people who maybe were just casual listeners who picked up the phone and called. I remember our producer Dave White, his name. He was taking all these calls from people, and he was getting all frustrated because all these people are calling about this shortage of weed in the city of Chicago. And so that day, the Wake and Bake Club was born. And it still exists to this day.
Yeah, because Rosie is way too fired up to be on any sort of thing that implies calm.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But he's got that California cool in him, too.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He's a Cali kid,
I think he wore a Death Row Records shirt the last time I saw him. So shout out to Steve Rosenblum. But the question is, if the Bears have a Bengals-like season, a.k.a. the team we lovingly refer to as Bears 2...
Bears too.
And go 9-8 without making the playoffs. Would that be acceptable?
By the way, Bears 2 did draft Tyler Warren. They drafted Tyler Warren.
So, Bears 2 is also having cheerleading tryouts.
Yeah, they're having cheerleading. That's right. The Honey Bears are back. Honey Bears 2.
See, this is the multiverse. It's the multiverse. We could just check in alternate reality Bears right there.
I love the idea of alternate reality Bears, a.k.a. Bears 2. Like, Bears 2 is owned by a 25-year-old TikTok influencer. The exact opposite of, legacy 100-year-old. You know what I'm saying?
They have Travion Henderson, too.
Bears 2 is run by corporate money, who does care about... They actually have standings in the spreadsheets. It's not in the actual league. Bears 2 is a completely different concept.
Oh, it's amazing. They actually, the wild thing is Bears 2 drafted Shedeur Sanders in the second round with one
Shedeur
of their,
Sanders is the Bears 2 starting quarterback,
right.
Actually.
He is playing defense. He is their kick returner. So they got a lot of respect, the Bears 2 do.
If you're wondering where this comes from, it was Mike Florio throwing out a theory that before the Bengals got appropriated funding, which was actually officially approved for their stadium for renovations, that the Bengals and Bears should combine efforts and have one single stadium. And that threw Grody and I into quite the tizzy.
Right. Bears
so,
2.
Yeah. So then we just started talking about Bears 2 and how it was essentially the anti-Bears.
I got an idea Friday. I'm
You're
back
welcome
with
to
you.
Join in on the fun.
Yeah. I think we should do a Bears 2 mock draft on Friday.
Yes. Bears 2 mock draft.
It's a rule 6 draft.
Does it have to be everybody who is available in this year's draft, or can you just draft other people?
No, that's why I'm saying it's like a rule 6, like rule 5 in baseball.
Oh,
rule
yeah.
6, so you could take players off of other teams. And I've mentioned a few of the players that they have. They did draft Tyler Warren because the Bears
won. Do they
won.
Draft Jalen Carter in this scenario?
Oh, yeah, that's a good... But no, because this is new. This is a brand new franchise, so they did not have a shot at it.
Okay.
But, yeah, they have Travion Henderson, they have Tyler Warren, and they have Shedeur Sanders, and we'll fill
and
in the rest.
Somehow they have salary cap
Who's their
money?
Quarterback, though?
Shedeur Sanders.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Here's the thing about the Bengals' 9-8 season. Joe Burrow's discussion about him being an MVP candidate and the performance that he had this past year. Joe Burrow, at times, absolutely carried that team. I wouldn't even just say at times. If Caleb Williams has the type of season that Joe Burrow has, and the Bears end up going 9-8, and I have gone so far as to say that I, again, will double down on the Bears are better than a 9-win team this season. Perhaps that is wish casting, but I don't care. I'm just there in my feeling about this team at this point with this front office and how long they've been there. This should be the time. Like, you are making no excuses for your quarterback at this point. You've provided him with every possible resource that you can. I'd like to see a little more offensive line depth. I'd like to see a little bit more solid of a running back room. But point being, if that results in the same type of performance that we saw out of Joe Burrow last year, then I'm okay with it. But to take a zoom out look at it, in the fourth year of a front office with a 1-1 quarterback, you still can't make the playoffs? That's an issue.
So no good for you.
I can't be okay with it. You know, the only way I'm okay with it is if Caleb Williams has that type of season. And I don't know that that is realistic. I don't even think that's a realistic expectation to put on him, because this is the first year of a new offense for him.
If the Bears go 9-8 and they don't make the playoffs, awesome. Absolutely. I am 100% okay with this. Is a team that has had 2 10-game losing streaks in the last 3 years. This is as close to rock bottom as the franchise has ever been. Last year was one of the worst seasons in Chicago Bears history. 5-12 and a 10-game losing streak where everything came undone in a year in which everything was supposed to be good. If you could have a winning record after that with a new head coach, with a first-year head coach, new players, a new defensive coordinator, new coaches, and a getting-to-know-you year, 9-8, I'll take. Let me just even go back here a little bit, Layla. Last 10 years, 2015, the Bears were 6-10. 2016, the Bears were 3-13. In 2017, the Bears were 5-11. 2018, how you doing, Matt Nagy? Good job. 12-4. In 2019, the Bears were 8-8. 2020, 8-8. 2021, 6-11. 2022, 3-14. 2023, 7-10. 2024, they were 5-12. 9-8, and if you do it the right way, like you said, with Caleb Williams looking good and promising, I'll take that every single day, and I won't look back.
Here's the problem. You just interpreted correctly the Bears with the Bears, but the issue shouldn't be where your bar is. The issue should be where the bar of the NFL is based on these timelines and these assets.
A 9-8 record, though, Layla, in that division, with Detroit, who's still better than you, with Minnesota, who's probably still better than you, with Green Bay Packers, who are still better than you, when you just look at what is happening right now, I take it, because that would probably mean wins in the division, too,
this
during
is not,
the year.
This is not a knock on J.J. McCarthy. It is a compliment of Caleb Williams when I say this. But the Bears had the chance to draft him. They still chose Caleb Williams. I can't predict that the Vikings won't have a setback when they're adjusting to a quarterback who missed his rookie season.
This
is his effective de facto rookie season. And until somebody figures out what's going on with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think that he's starting in Minnesota. You know, he'd be a backup and maybe a you know, counselor, veteran sounding board of some sort.
Their coaching is so good, though, in Minnesota. Look what they did to Sam Darnold. They gave Sam Darnold's career is back, and then some.
Just like I had faith in Shane Waldron because of what happened with Geno Smith, and I think that has more to do with Pete Carroll now, as we found out. I think there are a lot of really good quarterbacks in the NFL who get written off too quickly because they're just in the wrong system. Or they're with the wrong coach.
Well, that's just
There's a bigger shortage of good coaches, actual good coaches in the NFL, than there are capable quarterbacks. But here, you have a 1-1 quarterback, and you have what is considered the hottest coach in the coaching cycle, a very capable head coach. That has to stand for more than what we believe it to be because we observe the Bears. The standard has to be set to something else other than past history with this franchise.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm looking at the now, too. And when I look at the now, I say, it's pretty difficult. No matter how good Ben Johnson is, again, brand new head coach. We still don't even know if he can be a head coach. I think he's probably going to be pretty good at it, but we don't know that. We don't know if Colston Loveland's going to be good. We don't know if Luther Burden is going to be good. We don't know if Caleb Williams is going to take the next step.
But how long of a leash do these people get?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And I'm talking about the front office with a lot of this. Think about their second pick in the draft. They didn't draft for need. They drafted what they considered the best available. So now you've got a receiver room again where you have all these assets. And we saw a quarterback last year struggle to figure out how to help them all, how to give them what we thought they were going to get with distribution, with targets, with yards, everything else.
So then wouldn't 9-8 feel pretty good? If they would have
This is the fourth year of this front office. And if you'd keep telling me that they keep moving the goalposts when they've arguably gotten what is considered the things you need to be a successful team in the league, that is some sort of failure. I'm sorry.
Well, Kevin Warren moved the goalpost because he kept Ryan Poles here. If you want to go in that direction, like he said, you're allowed to start over. That's essentially what he has told Ryan Poles. We are also going to give you, though, the resources to go out and get Ben Johnson. You know, we're going to let you get that guy and let him bring in his staff and bring all of the potential magic that comes with him. But they are telling the Ryan Poles, yeah, you do. We are giving you a fresh start. So that stuff that happened before, unfortunately, didn't matter to the Bears. Now, if it's another horrible year this year, then we got to talk, but we got to figure out what the reasons are that the Bears were bad this year. And so much of it comes down to the quarterback and Caleb Williams. It's so important that he takes that next step, and we don't know if he's going to.
It also comes down to how you built this team. The first year of Ryan Poles' draft was not a wash to me. You just prove that when you decide to extend Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
These are players that you're expecting to be a part of this when it is successful and online. And, you know, here we are talking about the 2018 season again because it is a good contrast to everything else. But I remember when we were trying to recreate that magic in the late stages of the Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace combo. And I'm like, what magic are we even trying to recreate here?
2018.
This is a team that made poor decisions once the playoff game got there. The NFL was already finding out Matt Nagy's offense toward the end of the season, if you'll recall. That's why there had to be so many trick plays and goal line packages and gold go situations, because they were having trouble executing with traditional ways of scoring. And then hubris, I guess, is what prevented guys like Tariq Cohen from getting more touches in that game. It didn't just come down to a double doink, but because they got coach of the year and GM of the year, suddenly it was trying to recreate that over and over and over again when it should have been about the lens of just making the playoffs isn't good enough.
Yeah, Vic Fangio was the best coach of that year. Matt Nagy, he was brought in to figure out the offense, wasn't able to develop Mitch Trubisky, wasn't able to put together a running game. And guess what? The Bears defense was elite that year. For one shining year, the Bears defense was elite, and then it kind of just slid down after that.
This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And I would argue also with the health of Khalil Mack. You saw the drop off with that defense as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure, man. I mean, you had some stalwarts on that team. I mean, Akeem Hicks is a guy that doesn't get talked about enough. He was just a total and complete badass. But, I mean, that era of...
He was a total and complete badass.
I will say that...
He had career years when he was with the Bears.
Yeah, I will say that both Ryan Pace and Ryan Poles, both have done a pretty good job at building defenses. No doubt about it. But it's just not what... Like, you need that... But it's the offense that this city has been looking for forever. And, you know, both GM, obviously Ryan Pace, ultimately failed to put together a representative offense. And now we're going to see if Ryan Poles can do it.
602, thank you. Agree with Layla. Commanders, new owner, coach, lots of new players. They should be the expectation. Danny from the Valley. Sometimes the text line breaks it up. So apparently the middle part of your text, which came after the other parts of your text, said, and look at their arrow, etc. And why can't the Bears make the playoffs? Yes, I understand you're in the toughest division in football. But I also understand that that means a lot of guys want to step it up because of it. You also got your head coach from the toughest division in football. Annie up. It's been time.
Yeah. Well,
and part of the reason we look at this team and if we say, why isn't this successful? You have to go back to wondering why they didn't build from the inside out. Why you don't build from the lines first. I'm not talking about the decision to draft Caleb Williams. It's if we have this guy, why is this not working in a sustainable manner?
All worthwhile questions for sure. And they kind of have done that. Finally, the Bears this year with building the interior of their offensive line by drafting Ozzie Trapillo, and if you like to, a much lesser degree, Luke Newman. And then
sure, Luke Newman can get some love in this.
Yeah, why not? He's a sixth rounder.
It's like
Kyle Manun guy. This town,
we love Kyle Manun.
This town loves a backup quarterback, and it loves a seventh round running back. It really does. Khalil Herbert was a hero when he came here.
Kyle Manun.
Everybody
just
loves Manun. Oh, he's going to be good. Let me tell you, Grody. He's going to be
forward
good.
Forward, and you'll get 2 yards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I
stretch
love this
out
guy.
Your arms a little, and we'll be happy.
Oh,
about
I
it.
Think he's going to be good. Oh, yeah, he's the old Grody. Come on, man. Look at this guy.
We should talk about this with James Big Cat Williams. He joins us at 1 o'clock. And coming up next on Raheemy and Harris on the Score, it is James Fegan. Because don't look now, people, but the Sox are 3-1 this month. Yeah, that's right. We said it. James Fegan to talk White Sox next.
Sox Machine. James Fegan. White Sox reporter for SoxMachine.com.
I can anticipate this question. It's probably way too early.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
Yes, James.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendrick?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I didn't know that. I'd check the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan on 670 The Score.
We want Machine.
Sox Machine. Sox Machine.
We go out to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find our friend James Fegan. He is of Sox Machine. It is my favorite guest open on the Score. The White Sox beat reporter for SoxMachine.com. You can check out his work on X at JR Fegan. James, I feel like we have a lot to discuss with you. It's been a minute since we talked, and I think I want to start with the... Not the aspect of the Sox having a good weekend, especially taking their second series of the season, which is a plus. But from the aspect of, I have not talked about Colson Montgomery with you. And in the spirit of venting to guests on the midday show, which I believe was a tradition started well before me.
Yeah, I believe so.
I can't help but think that this is an indictment of the organization. When you consider how many prospects come up via trade, this person was drafted in 2021, considered at one point to be the 13th best prospect in all of baseball, talked about like he was going to be the team's opening day shortstop. And to see the fall even from March until now, I don't know how you don't look at this as some sort of indictment of the organizational health here.
It's certainly a project that they've centered a lot as being, you know, how much of that is feeling like Colson was especially marketable or, you know, a face that the fans could embrace, but someone they've centered a lot in what they feel like the future of the team is going to look like. So on some sense, like Colson could shake out to be like a guy who, you know, eventually figures it out, has a high strikeout rate, hits low average, but, you know, gets the 25 home runs and like, still be like someone you look at like at the end of like, oh, draft in the back of the first round, you know, became kind of a mistake power hitter. All right, maybe moved off the third base. Like, that's not bad value. That's not a bad outcome. Like, useful big leaguer, but is tracking towards not being maybe the centerpiece of a winning team that they kind of marketed him as. So I think that reads as a bigger misjudgment than maybe just him not working out or any good prospect in a vacuum kind of falling backwards would say. So I get what you mean in terms of like this was someone who was really pushed as leading the charge of what the next good team is going to be, and now is probably someone you don't put in the top five organizationally or prospects. That said, like, you know, this has happened before for prospects. I don't think like Colson's done because he's going to you know, the complex league to work out things. Like, you know, Marcus Thames even said like he had gone through that at one point in his career. It's just we're now picking up a very large sample of like not expecting this to be like a guy who, you know, walks more than he struck out, like an A-ball like he used to do, or posted like 400 OBPs and it's just going to live on base. Like, it's more like we've started seeing like the limitations in this game get really like calcified in a way that even if they kind of get him going again in a way where he's a productive player, it's probably not going to be like this, you know, best player on a division winning team type of situation. And that's really, I think, what fans are probably led to believe, and certainly coming off of feeling like they got sold a bill of goods with the last crop of prospects who didn't like kind of show up to the potential that they were billed as. I think it's going to lead a lot of people to kind of feel like, all right, same old, even if there are other projects that are going better to feel good about.
James, I appreciate you taking my call on the venting portion of the guest being on our midday show on The Score. But I do
are
also...
Are you sure that's all the venting portion?
No. In fact, I had a follow-up. I agree with you about this feeling similar. I think it also just illustrates perhaps how deep the hole they're in. When development from the minor leagues to the big leagues was such a topic of discussion as to why Chris Getz is in place to begin with, they've talked a lot about implementations of technology that weren't there previously. But at some point, you have to start seeing some of this come online in a way that isn't just from the players you've traded for. Great that we're talking about guys like Chase Meideroth. You know, great that that's happening. But and great that I think Miguel Vargas has come on in a way that makes you more encouraged. But I also want to see what they're doing with their own people, too, who came up through the system originally.
For sure. I think not producing in the draft is pretty much, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why the last competitive cycle went through. But like, as far as, you know, what they got out of Gavin Sheets, Jake Berger, Nick Madrigal, Andrew Vaughn, that run of like drafting super high, that was a big reason why that project kind of fell through. And I think there have been hints, like certainly having Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. And I want to say that their last few drafts have shown a lot more promising signs, but they're critically low on bats for a system. And so for Colson to take a step backwards and what you kind of can expect him to be, even if like this is kind of the nadir and, you know, it's dangerous to overreact right now to what he is and maybe winds up being like a power hitter that people enjoy, it kind of lays bare like, this is a shortcoming that are they going to be able to address this through their last really big trade chip in Luis Robert? Is this something that they're going to, you know, invest more in the draft? They've been kind of pitching heavy because they feel confident they can develop that. How is the offense going to come in the system if the draft the kind of the most high profile draft develop project is going this direction? I can see how it contributes to the anxiety of that, which was already present before this happened.
James, it was a nice weekend for the White Sox.
It really was.
I mean, I saw good things. Even when they lost, like they made some good contact off of Hunter Brown on Saturday. I enjoyed seeing that. Yesterday, they come back from down 4-1 in the fifth to win the game. Here's the question, because I've been texted now twice, once during this show by a big time watch the White Sox no matter what. Two of my White Sox fan friends have said to me, yo, I know it's still bad. They're 10-24, but this team is different. And I feel like we want to be optimistic about it. We don't want to think about the White Sox losing 100 games again. Is this team different, better than last year's?
Well, they're on a 47-win pace, so they're comfortably striding ahead now after winning a series. I think this team, well, one, I think the defense has kind of been fundamentally better, and that, you know, provides just like less ugliness on a day-to-day basis. I thought it was really instructive that they faced Lance McCullers. Obviously, I missed 3 years. First start back, Lance McCullers, but 2021, they faced Lance McCullers in the playoffs. He eats their lunch. Lance McCullers throws a ton of breaking balls, throws a ton of chase pitches. He was kryptonite for that, like, 2021 offense that was, like, way more talented than this one, but chased all the time. If you just pelted them with sliders out of the zone, they would chase them. And so, like, Lance McCullers was their undoing in that series. This team doesn't have nearly as much talent to do anything with pitches in the zone, but is very a lot better at, like, not chasing out of the zone. So is a diminished form of Lance McCullers, but to see him make them, like, he threw over like 85 pitches without even getting out of the fourth inning, just kind of shows like they're not better, but they're a different type. And I think from a viewing experience, you appreciate the players who are maybe maximizing what they're doing with very limited tools, as opposed to seeing, like, you know, some of the most talented hitters you've ever seen kind of wasted with poor approaches. So I think they're a bit more lovable than they have been in the past. Even if love might be a strong word with how the fans feel about this White Sox team.
47-win pace. I don't know if that's love or not, but yeah, I hear you.
Hey, it's an improvement.
They don't inspire as much like revulsion as like how they're going about it. So it's encouraging, like, well, if they play like this when they have more talent, it'll be better, is the kind of overriding logic.
Can we talk about Tyler Osick? I'd like to talk about Tyler Osick with you here, James. For people who don't know, Tyler Osick is a former White Sox prospect. And a tweet that he sent out that has since been scrubbed, but we haven't. I heard, and shout out to Matt Spiegel. I heard him talking about it on Hit and Run. And so I wanted to follow up with you on it today. And here is the tweet that is sent out, you know, talking about guys that there was a lot of hope for. Here's Tyler Osick. He says in a tweet, "I'll tell the truth here. Andrew Vaughn would be out in Arizona golfing, and we would all be grinding in Arizona at the facility in the off season. And he'd show up 2 times per week, dumbbell press 40 pounds, take 20 swings off the machine, show up and hit 250 with 15 bombs and 500-plus at-bats, then repeat the next year. To me, that was just a slap in the face to all the people grinding to make it, given the keys to the game, and took it for granted. Promote Tim Elko."
Woo!
What do you say about that, White Sox beat writer?
I can't speak to like what Tyler witnessed in the offseason or like how representative it is of like Andrew Vaughn's entire like routine. I will say, like, you know, generally, whatever White Sox people talk about Andrew Vaughn, they kind of laud his clubhouse present and work ethic in a way that, like, there's not, like, the results haven't been there, so it's kind of like the thing they can center on. But I think the way his career has gone, where he hasn't produced and, you know, hasn't necessarily progressed, I think it kind of invites people to kind of look at it and say, well, maybe what I saw kind of indicates why this hasn't happened for him. Whereas, like, if somebody's putting up numbers, they'd be like, oh, that guy just knows what he needs to get ready. Whereas seeing someone who really hasn't, like, you know, chase and, you know, lack of plate discipline, is, I think, is probably the main reason he hasn't, like, progressed. And, you know, back in 2023, when there was kind of division with the White Sox about, like, our guys embracing the eye pitch and the machine work that they're emphasizing, Vaughn was part of that group that was using it, but that doesn't become, like, a big part of his narrative because we don't really see the progress in his plate discipline. So I think the way that his, like, progress is kind of stagnated, it kind of invites to say, like, hey, is this part of his routine why it's not going up? Is this thing not why it's up? Like, that's kind of comes to the territory of the lack of progress we made, even if, you know, I can't say that what Tyler said is wrong or that Andrew wasn't doing more.
Mm-hmm. No, I got you. Okay, so aside from that, completely detached from it, is Elko somebody who could or should be promoted? Is he at least right about that part, aside from the Vaughn shot?
Uh-oh.
Sorry. I have to call. Yes, Elko is like clearly playing at a level where he's going to get promoted like at some point, and I think he inevitably plays in Chicago at some point this season. It's just a question of for any like player in Charlotte, any minor leaguer, like the front office can kind of look at it like, well, once we clear the decks of the trade deadline, this guy can play in the majors, and any productive guy in Charlotte we can try out.
Mm-hmm.
What's our rush to do it?
Right.
We have these guys that we're trying to kind of show off for trade opportunities. And I think that's going to take a bigger priority. At the same time, like they've promoted guys like Edgar Caro and Chase Meidroff and are sensibly taking at bats away from younger players. So I think it does kind of speak to a little bit like Elko not really being a guy that they planned on really taking up and taking a longer window to be convinced in him than I think fans appreciate for someone who's kind of producing in a way that they obviously haven't seen the starting first base in the majors produce. So I think that deservedly produces a lot of attention from the fan base. But like you're starting to hear even like Sox people go on record like, yeah, we kind of thought that guy would hit a wall at some point, or that's a guy who's going to have to put up numbers at some point. I think Elgo's kind of outperformed in a way where he wasn't someone they envisioned being part of their long-term core. Like, you know, it was a senior sign for $35,000 as a 23-year-old in like the lowest level, who's just kind of kept getting better. But I think especially we've seen, you know, with the tone of that tweet about Vaughn and having a guy who clearly has just kind of, you know, kept improving in a way where he's kept earning his promotions, even if they weren't kind of prescribed for him, really kind of lays bare the conflict of what fans would want to see of like, hey, this guy's earned it. Shouldn't he get a shot at some point? Which I think he will, but it doesn't seem like they want to really turn away from what their original plans are that quickly to do it, even if it's, you know, inevitable. We should see plenty of Tim Elko. It's just maybe they're still stuck in plan A of like, we want to play veterans and then trade him and then restock our farm system, and not going to like alter the plan for a guy that we never really saw as like the future cornerstone until he maybe proved it to us.
Well, I think it's a good problem to have, and B, on this team of all teams, it should be something you at least consider. The delta and the difference of who's up and who's not on this team in particular, that would indicate that this is something worth a shot. I also want to point out this. The last games for Luis Robert, 8 total. This is a wild set of numbers. Hits in 7 of his last 8 games. It's a .345 batting average. 3 home runs, 9 RBI, 8 stolen bases over those last 8. First player in White Sox history with 3 home runs and 8 stolen bases in an 8-game span. How encouraged are you by his production?
I mean, a lot. I think, you know, Getz was being asked like at the start of last homestand about Robert and slow start, and he kind of like it seemed like a little crack in the facade of like, we just wanted to keep him healthy in April. Like, we wanted him to not pull a hamstring or do something like a soft tissue injury in the cold weather. Like, they kind of feel like now that he's out of it or things are warming up, like, all right, if they've dodged that first bullet, he's eventually going to trend up, especially like you're still seeing like the bat speed like be where it's supposed to be, taking more pitches and taking more walks than ever. Like, unless he's been like monstarred, like it should turn around. So, and especially having him kind of run wild on bases is like a big, like flashing red, like I'm healthy, like for him to do that. So yeah, they kind of felt like this was a little inevitable, but it's a lot easier to say that after seeing it for a week after, as opposed to watching him just, I mean, even Saturday, he had the golden sombrero and swinging at sliders. So that's still in him. He's still going to be a streaky player probably until his dying day. But it's a little bit easier to say like, all right, the talent's clearly in there. It seems like he's coming around a bit. It's not going to be MVP level player, but it's going to be valuable Luis Robert again.
Yeah. When you talked about the White Sox against Lance McCullers and those particular batters having trouble against the slider, the amount of years that I've spent talking about those particular batters having trouble against the slider, I made a lot of money talking about it over those years, but it also left you with some scars.
You
know what I'm saying?
Is that what you're saying?
No, it was my job. I was hosting when Chuck was at the ballpark. I was hosting White Sox pre and post game.
I know.
It was great, but it kind of stunk because I was like, oh no. Yes, that was the entire batting approach. James,
I remember talking with like a White Sox person like a few years back about like, I was trying to be like overly gentle and like specific about it. Like, oh, this pitcher, he has a, his doesn't quite match up with you for like this and that reason. They thought like, doesn't match up with us. You mean he's right-handed with a slider?
Yes. Yes, that is the exact thing. All right. So it's not just me and it wasn't just our show and it wasn't just the analysts. All right. Well, I'm glad to see we all were in that space of time together. At least we have that to bind us.
The story is corroborated. Boom.
James, thanks for the therapy session, but most importantly, the information.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That was James Fegan joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Coming up next, it is halftime, and I have a headline that old school scoreness listeners are going to love.
And I have something that, you ready for this? White Sox fans are going to love what I have to present. And I think I might want to add something, too. And I'll tell you guys during the break.
Ooh.
Leila Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime. Ooh.
I'm not asking you to stand up and get crunk. It's a Monday. You're probably at work, and I get all of that. Also, the weather is not cooperating, but it is halftime here on Rahimi and Harris. Mark Rohde is in for Marshall Harris, and we spent the first hour talking about the Cubs because, unfortunately, a series win over the Brewers can't just be cool. It comes with a side of worrying about Shota Imanaga as we try to figure out what's going on with his left hamstring strain, as are the Cubs. We also asked the question, do you feel better or worse after this weekend? And got a lot of varied responses. You might be surprised. Additionally, we just talked White Sox with James Fegan, and we asked a very good Rosenblum hypothetical. The Bears go 9-8 next season, but they don't make the playoffs. Is it enough?
It's halftime.
All right, so this is a headline that is just perfect for the midday show. Perfect for the sense of humor. This is the actual headline. Powerball jackpot winner arrested after kicking deputy in face, authorities. Okay. It's just a bunch of words. It's like they took a bunch of words and just put them together, and that's what came out. I'm going to give you one guess what state this happened in.
Ohio?
Come on.
Florida.
You know it. So I think this guy just won the lottery and then decided to get crazy. Like, you can't tell me nothing.
Wait a minute.
Law officers in Pinellas County, Florida, arrested a Kentucky man who just days after winning the $167 million Powerball jackpot, allegedly kicked a deputy during a fight at a resort. Not just kicked him. He kicked him in the face.
I'm rich, bitch.
Like, how does... Yes, but also, what kind of high kick are we talking about here? That's not easy. Maybe he was down.
Oh, my God.
So... Yeah, he's in jail now, and he did actually, according to the affidavit, kick him in the face. Jesus. His name is James Farthing. He was charged with felony battery on a law enforcement officer. But here's where it gets interesting. His girlfriend was also arrested. Her name is Jacqueline Fightmaster.
No, now you're making stuff up.
This is fake. This is a fake story.
No, you got AI'd.
See, a woman with the name...
I did not. This is a reputable news source. Oh,
that's a verb now. You get AI'd.
You've been AI'd.
A woman with the name Fightmaster isn't going to get with anybody that can't kick somebody in the face.
So she was charged with... She was charged with disorderly intoxication, and this came 3 days after winning the Powerball jackpot in Kentucky.
Oh, man.
Is that the first thing you would do after you won the lottery? Oh. Just start fights with whoever?
Imagine
and your girlfriend's name is Fight Mess.
Unlimited bail money.
Imagine that. Wake up. You know, we've all done that where we wake up after a night of drink. We're like, oh, my God, what did I do? What did I say? Imagine that pain. Oh, my God. Dude, you kicked a cop after you won the lottery. What?
In the face.
In the face.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Mark Rohde.
Are you ready for me?
Yeah.
It's halftime.
So, I noticed that in the White Sox game, you guys don't think I watch the White Sox. I do.
They don't think any of us watch
the
White Sox.
I know. I was watching them all weekend long, and one thing that I saw was Jeff Blum throwing out the first pitch of one of the games. And he was doing it in, I was very proud, in a White Sox jersey. He's a Houston broadcaster. He is loyal.
Yeah, I used to work with him.
Exactly. So you know he is much more loyal to his days playing with the Houston Astros from whence he came when the White Sox made the trade for him. He feels like he's a Houston Astro, not a White Sox. So I was happy with him. And then it reminded me of one of the greatest moments in White Sox history. I was there. Game 3 of the World Series, October 28th in the 14th inning.
Longest game in the World Series history. Blum hits it into right, down the line. It is gone. Jeff Blum, the former Astro, goes deep. And here in the 14th inning, the White Sox take a 6-5 lead. Jeff Blum gets his first at-bat of this series and only his second of the postseason.
White Sox end up winning that game 7-5 in 14 innings. Damaso Marte the win, Mark Burley the save, and then the White Sox win the whole thing on October 4th the next day as they beat Houston 1-0. Freddie Garcia over Brad Lidge and Bobby Jenks with the save. It was so nice. That was one of my favorite like sports experiences ever, was following the White Sox on that World Series run from Boston to Anaheim through Houston and then on the field afterwards with Steve Perry and all the other White Sox. It was great.
Never in a million years thought I would end up working with Ozzie Guillen, you know? It's crazy how life will come at you that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ozzie Guillen. That's when Kenny Williams and Ozzie Guillen were besties. Kenny Williams, after that game, where's my manager? Where's my manager? I'm down on the field, and all he's worried about is, where's Ozzie? And they embraced, and boy, did they love each other then. I'm so sad that the whole thing went downhill.
Mark Burley gave Jerry Reinsdorf the ball, too. At the parade.
Yeah, oh, it was just...
The memories.
No, that was a beautiful thing that should have lasted longer, and... Yeah.
Yeah. Quite the story about Mark Burley coming on in relief, by the way. But that's another story for another day, because we have a pretty unhinged five on it next
Drinkowitz.
For you. Yeah. Mark and I just started to go stream of consciousness, and you get to judge. You get to have some judgment coming up next, along with some sports talk. This is Raheem Ian Harris, Mark Grodian on The Score.